Listeners, please be aware that some comments mentioned in this week's episode deal with the topic of suicide and the death of family members. I know these subjects can be particularly difficult or triggering for many people, myself included. So please be sure to take care of yourself first if you choose to continue listening to this episode.
This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield. With me this week is Hoikur Gudmundsson. Hoikur, thank you for coming on Postcards.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Okay, did I say your name right?
Yeah, very close. Yeah.
So that means no. Can you tell our listeners how to say it?
Yeah, okay. It's Hoikur.
Hoikur.
Hoikur Gudmundsson, yeah.
Hey, is this your first podcast?
This is my first one on Trek FM. I've done one podcast with Mike Wong from Strange New Worlds podcast, so it's my second podcast.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's great to have you on today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Hoikur, what is your first Star Trek memory?
I have two memories. The first one was when I was in my early teens, and I saw some, you know, strange people in pajamas on my friend's cable TV, and I thought it was ridiculous. Then a little bit later, I was walking past the TV. And they were showing the first episode of The Emissary, and Kaiapaka looked a little bit like my grandmother,
and
she had passed away a few years before. So I thought, like, might be interesting to sit down and see what's going on. And I got hooked. I saw every single episode except for one of Deep Space Nine when they were showing it first time around in Iceland. And shortly after, they started showing Voyager as well. So I watched all of that as well. So
nice.
That's how I got started. That was in, I think, 94 or 5.
Very cool. And you are, as you said, in Iceland, right? You're in Reykjavik?
Yes.
Cool. Well, today we're discussing the fan response to Nepenthe. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special Postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 427 comments on the Postcards thread, which is a 34% increase from our last episode. Listeners, keep those comments coming because we love your feedback. Comments may be edited for time. Hoikur, get us started, please.
So, I do apologize if I butcher any names, but Chris will promise to correct me if he knows the correct pronunciations of the names. So, Lee Hutchison starts with saying, one of the franchise's finest hours. And Anne-Marie Siegel says, I went with a mini bottle of champagne and a chocolate cupcake in honor of Diana.
Yeah, Anne-Marie and I met on the plane coming back from STLV last year.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she does stuff with Seventh Rule, the Seventh Rule podcast.
Oh, it's wonderful. I celebrate her, Diana's life every day by eating a lot of chocolate and thinking about her.
Nice.
It goes by.
And you know, Lee, I agree. I'm kind of thinking this is one of the franchise's finest hours as well.
Mm-hmm.
I walked away with feeling that way after seeing the episode.
Yeah, I've seen the episode 3 times now, and each time I teared up, and I don't really easily tear up, but each time I teared up, and especially with the moments with the Troys, with the Rikers and Picard meeting them. I always call them the Troys, so I might do that this episode.
Oh yeah, I call them the Troys too, and I teared up as well. It's the first time in a while that I've teared up watching a Star Trek episode. Duncan Barrett says, best Trek episode since probably season 6 of DS9, in my opinion. Absolutely loved it. I've never seen Marina Sirtis give a better performance as Troi. She made me cry twice in one episode here.
Yeah. So, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to agree. I always loved Troi, but my main problem with Troi and also with Crusher is that I felt when I was watching both TNG and the movies is that they weren't given enough to do. And I felt she was really honored this time around by giving some really importance in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I think especially in the movies, they were overlooked a lot. And I just really loved seeing Marina showing her empathy as half being half Beta Zed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Brandon A. Cowles, I think I can forgive the Troi's for the Enterprise finale appearance. again, coming to the Troi's. Laurie Damon Bosset, not safe to be an export in this show. On this show, each had gone, now Hugh and his ex-beast companions right before him. At least Seven is still alive, right? Right?
Yeah, I don't think it's the Troi's fault for their Enterprise finale episode.
No.
And they're killing off the Borgs. Seven is still alive. Laurie, yeah, don't definitely worry about it.
And to be honest, I was just so happy to see the Troi's on the Enterprise finale, even though I think they shouldn't have been there. I just loved seeing them there, so I forgive it.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that episode right now.
I have some. Yeah, we can do that off the show.
Robert J. Geiger says, after last week's crescendo of action, this week's slower pace definitely stood out. But I agree with those who have said this is probably the series' finest hour so far. This episode kind of reminded me of Family in its approach of let's go down after a bunch of trauma. I'm glad the show is dropping in the old cast slowly so that we don't get it all in one shot, but man, am I ready for the returns of LaForge, Worf, and especially Crusher. Robert, me too. Thank you for your comment.
And I totally agree. Many people have been saying that this season has been very slow so far, and I am totally loving it. I love having these moments instead of too much action. I could watch like everyday life of Star Trek, you know, without any action for 7 seasons.
Yeah. The beginning I was really liking. A few episodes in, I started liking it a little bit less. And the past 2 episodes, especially Nepenthe, have really gotten me a lot more happy and excited about it.
Mm. So Mark Keller says, the Ready Room this week is the best yet. Having Whedon, Frakes, and Spiner sit down and talk was awesome. And did Frakes answer the is Commodore O a Romulan question?
So Mark is talking about the official after show for Picard. And I did not see it this week yet, so I have no idea what happened. I'm behind.
So when it came to this Ready Room, I fell asleep. I had been awake for so many hours. I was working on an application for my PhD fund, and I went into it completely intending to listen to it, but I fell asleep immediately, and I haven't rewatched it, so I don't really know what he said. So okay. I would really like to know the answer to that question.
Yeah, we should have both rewatched it, or we at least watched it.
Yeah.
Janessa Quijada says, okay, Nerissa must absolutely effing die now. Whoa, wait. If La Serena's medbay is that close to the bridge, then why didn't anyone hear Agnes murdering Maddox? Some sort of sound dampening field no one mentioned or noticed? Also, I'm pretty sure that was a real 3D printer being used as a replicator prop. Good catch, Janessa. Yes, Nerissa needs to die. And we saw that the sick bay is right there behind the bridge this last episode. So I don't know. Nobody heard Agnes murdering Maddox.
It wasn't very loud either, but
yeah.
But maybe, I mean, it was not out of sight either, so someone might have noticed it.
Well, the EMH, right, knew something was up.
Yeah, I think she reprogrammed him. I'm sure of it because of her technical abilities. I'm convinced of it.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah, and I think we'll figure it out or learn about it soon. And when it comes to Nerissa, I think the moment I saw her in the first episode, I felt like it was an actress playing a character she knew would die. So
really?
Yeah, there was something about her portrayal of the character. I thought she's playing someone that she knows is going to die. But maybe it's just a wishful thinking.
Well, that's a really interesting observation.
But then again, there are people died that I didn't expect to die, like Hugh. So
you think he's dead for sure?
I'm very afraid of it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm not happy about that.
Dennis Bellinger, am I a bad person if I cheered at Narek's misfortune? Also, Agnes trying on redemption, loving it. I thought Rios is thick for suspecting Rafi and not Agnes, but I guess Zach will do that to you. I love Kestra and the fact that they had named their son after old Iron Boots Riker, Will's ancestor we heard from in Voyager. I would have loved to know that kid. Is it just me, or did the trailer for next week's episode kind of allude that Seven might end up being crowned Queen of the XBs? Well, I definitely am afraid that they might do something bad to Seven, but my hopes is that when Picard is over, Seven will take over the show. So I'm hoping that they're not doing something final to her.
I don't want them to do anything final to Seven either. I think she needs a lot more than what we're seeing of her now. And there was some really interesting trailer stuff next week, I noticed, with Seven too. It looked like there was a queen type of thing going on from what we saw of the queen in First Contact and Voyager. Dennis, I don't think that Rios actually suspected Rafi. I think it was a misdirect. I think he was trying to see if he could get more information out of Agnes and see if Agnes would throw Rafi under the bus.
I would say in hindsight that I agree with you, but I didn't get it. I was on Dennis' side when I saw that episode all three times.
Okay.
But after reading some of the comments, I thought maybe he was just trying to mislead her to get her to confess.
Yeah. I will confess I've only seen the episode one time so far.
How dare you?
I know. I had a busy weekend. I was out of town. Yeah. Lori Damon Bowe says, unless Vulcans or Romulans have figured out a way to lie during a mind meld, I'm horrified to say that maybe the Romulans are rightfully convinced that AI is dangerous. But our very first scene of the series was about poker and bluffing, and determining what reality and truth are has certainly been a major theme. Great comment, Lori. Yeah, going back to that poker scene and the queens that we saw.
Yeah, I think this comment was really thought-provoking for me and connecting things that I hadn't connected before.
Hoikur, did you think that O was a Romulan or a Vulcan?
I am still on the Vulcan side. But then again, I missed Frake's comment on the Ready Room, so I don't know yet.
That's right, so did I.
Yeah, but she seems like a Vulcan to me, and I would assume that maybe the Jadvas might be influenced by the Vulcans, or even controlled by the Vulcans, and the Vulcan logic extremist or something, because it's going so deep into conspiracies.
Right. Okay.
But you never know. Karen Chaplis, I suspect one often feels like vomiting after a mind melt. Second favorite line, so you want to be as deep in Romulan in the rest of your life? I love that line. And Ryan Bramble, the hat tilt killed me. She nailed it. Maybe a top 10 track episode.
I liked that line too, Karen. And the head tilt was so good. The Data-like head tilt that Soji did.
I rewatched the last four episodes last night, on Saturday, to catch up with everything. And I noticed she'd done it before, at least twice. So at least once or twice before. And so it wasn't just in this episode, like sometimes in the past, they would do something completely out of character and make it seem like completely in character. But this thing I really liked.
Yeah. Christopher Mock says, great to see the Troys again. And I see Riker hasn't left all the Starfleet tech behind unless these models of log cabin come with shield grids. Riker being active reserve and insinuating Picard needed more help with this, including contacting Starfleet and letting it slip he could return anytime for a good reason. I smell a setup for a save the day moment in the final episode. He saved the day in All Good Things when Picard found himself in a bind, and I see it happening again here for sure. I'm convinced my theory from last week's episode about the Romulans having a big problem with the Borg is going to come to pass in episode 8. Just that trailer alone for next week's shows the cube regenerating and some eerie green lights behind Seven. There's about to be a nanoprobe party on the artifact, and the Romulans are honored guests. Christopher, I like these theories that you're coming up with lately. It's nice to speculate on those things, and I think they're really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And calling it a nanoprobe party and the Romulans are honored guests actually made me laugh when I read this out for the first time. So, yeah, I think we're going to see some really intense things in next episode.
Yeah.
J.J. Becker, when Soji and Picard appear on Nepenthe, the scenery is just like an episode of TNG. I thought of Riker's first encounter with Data on the holodeck. The opening with Bunny, followed by Kestra and Rabbit Ears, harkens back to Raffi's down another rabbit hole remark from earlier in the season. This is further reinforced by Soji's statement that none of this is real, giving the impression that we really are through the looking glass now. I just totally agree. And I didn't notice did you notice the rabbit with the horn? It was like a unicorn rabbit. I didn't notice it until my third watch. So
the bunny corn.
Yeah. So that's why I got it.
Yeah, they called it the bunny corn. Mm-hmm. I like that JJ is going back into the off to see the wizard rabbit hole, Alice in Wonderland type of thing.
Do you think this reference to Alice in Wonderland is something that Star Trek is trying to connect their shows with because it's also in Discovery? Or is it something that's so ingrained in American culture that it's so natural to include it in everything, in everyday talking? So, because in Iceland, everyone knows this story, but you would never hear a person quoting the story in Icelandic. We don't know it that well, but maybe in American culture, it's so deeply ingrained that it feels just natural to use this as reference points all the time.
That's a really good question. I do think that a lot of it is purposeful. I mean, we had it also in the original series. Was it Shore Leave?
Yeah.
And of course, Discovery. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, Alice in Wonderland is such a piece of literature that everybody knows about. You know, even Tom Waits, the singer-songwriter, has an album named Alice that is based upon the Alice in Wonderland story. And and he also wrote a musical.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Before the album was even recorded, which explores, it's crazy. My boyfriend and I went and saw it at Yale a few weeks ago, and it was really, really interesting. So there's lots of references to Alice in Wonderland in other forms of art too. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's because they're trying to weave it in the into the fabric of Star Trek, or if it's just because it's so American that it just kind of pops up everywhere.
Yeah.
Suman Dewan, Will saying, "Stay as long as you like. Whatever it is, we can handle it." Their reunion scene had me in tears. It was so beautifully written and performed. The scene when Will and Picard are walking was equally as beautiful. These people have such a strong bond. It was evident that they all consider each other family. Yeah, absolutely, Suman. And thank you for the chat earlier this week in which you told me how to pronounce your first name correctly. I hope I did it right.
Yeah, I think everyone just teared up watching this episode this time around. Brian Yates says, "Best episode yet. Kestra has picked up some of her mother's counseling skills and learned a few things from her dad also. Pretty sure this shows us that Jurati is human." Yeah.
Yeah, Brian. So there had been some speculation that perhaps Jurati is a synth, but I didn't really.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that she's so... It sounds almost like prejudice, but she sounds too human to be not another species or an android. So I totally agree.
I mean, Soji and Daj also sounded human too. They weren't aware.
Yeah,
but they were synths.
You are right.
Yeah. What did you think of Kestra? I like that Brian's pointing out that she has a mix of her mom's skills and her dad's skills. That's really cool.
Yeah. And I also think that she was both beautifully written and acted in a way that it wasn't put in your face that she was quarter betazoid. It wasn't discussed, but it was so clear that she had deep insight into people's feelings, more than maybe someone her age would have if they were only human.
Uh-huh. I like that she was texting at the dinner table.
Yeah, so that was very modern in a Star Trek way. I liked how they did it. I would like to see more of that girl.
I would too. And I love that they named her after
Yeah, Troy's sister. Yeah, that was great.
I love that episode, Dark Page.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I need to rewatch it.
Jason Myers says, I dare say Star Trek has finally pulled off a believable and likable portrayal of a teenager. Who knew Kestra would be the most interesting person in this episode with the last name Riker or Troy? This is my favorite episode of Star Trek in years. It just felt full of nostalgia, of plot, of character, of personal growth. It's all been worth it for this. Jason, I agree that it's all been worth it for what we got in this episode. And this, I told Brandy, Jacola, and Liam from the Edge Main show that to me, after watching this episode just one time in the pool that is some of the best Star Trek episodes that have ever been made, this to me is swimming around at the top of that pool, just with what I felt from the episode and how good it made me feel and how safe it made me feel.
Yeah, I tend to be like Brandy, I think. I think it's Brandy who doesn't pick favorites.
Right, she does not.
I'm kind of like her when it comes to picking favorites. I really like this episode. It depends on my mood and everything, what is a favorite episode for me each time. So I decided to be like her and not pick favorites. But I had a viewing party for this episode last Saturday with a lot of friends and one old friend who is an old TNG fan. He said exactly the same things, like it was just so much nostalgia of both plot and characters and personal growth, but without overdoing it, there was something still original in this episode, in my opinion. Hmm. So I wouldn't say this is a fan service episode. I felt it was all earned. Billy Wells Logue, this is now my favorite episode, but all I really want to talk about is Rios doing the Archer's Light Down, hot. And Jeff Lubin, so Seven's business card, is she a Green Lantern?
I didn't catch the Archer slide down.
Well, I did, but I would say that everything Rios does is hot, so it doesn't count. I
mean, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't notice, I think they're referring to Archer sliding down in Enterprise.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, it actually, I remember when I saw it in the episode, I knew there was a reference to something, but it wasn't until I read this comment that I realized what it was reminding me of.
And no, I don't think Seven's a Green Lantern, but she did leave her business card with Picard and somehow Elnor found it.
Yeah.
Somehow it was left for Elnor.
So that was, I tried to forgive everything that I find like a mistake in every episode. And I think that you can have, I think people can have what is called negative affinity. So you can find fault in everything. And I try to see the things that I find at fault and just accept them, embrace them, and agree to disagree. And this was one of the moments that I felt really unreal in the episode. Of course, I wanted to find the business card, but I felt like we should have seen some reference to it. And I think Michael Chabon said it was Hugh's business card. And I think if it had been more clear that he was in Hugh's room or Hugh's office, I would have been, you know, it would have made more sense to me.
Huh. Well, okay. So a lot, some listeners have commented that Picard left it for Elnor to find. And I am suddenly remembering that in The Impossible Box, I watched it with captions, and there's a moment where there's a caption where Picard says to Elnor, "I'll find you again," before he and Soji take off to Nepenthe.
Oh.
But that was not vocalized. There was a subtitle there, but it wasn't said. Yeah, and so I don't know if it had something to do with that, but if Chabon was saying that it was actually Hughes,
I think he did it on his Instagram. I have to go through his Instagram post again, but okay. I think he said it there. But then again, I also watched it with closed captions or text, as I'm not English, so it helps me to see texted. And I did notice the same thing, but I think it's a good connection because he definitely then made an effort.
Yeah.
He definitely made a promise to him, and this would have made sense then. So I think it's a good connection you had there.
Yeah. I do like that you're accepting of little nitpicky things and don't worry about them so much.
Yeah.
It's really easy to
fall into that rabbit hole.
Yeah, so to speak. Chris Chaplin, what Hugh added to Trek today is the same as back in Iborg, a beautiful character of empathy which teaches us, the viewer, to name the voiceless victims among us. While I don't think he needed to die, he will remain a vital character in the Trek story. Yeah, Chris, I've always felt that way about Hugh, that he teaches us empathy and to name the voiceless victims. And yeah, I don't think he needed to die either.
Yeah. I think this also might be a cultural difference, because in Icelandic television, you don't really see people die that much like you do in American television. And and I think in European TV also, it might be less, they might be less prone to kill off characters than they do generally in the States. So I really hope that if Hugh is completely dead, which I assume he is, that it has a deep, deep, deep significance to the story ahead. Otherwise, I think it was a waste to get rid of this beautiful character. And I was really excited to get to see more of him, to see him develop and grow over the next two seasons and even more. So if he's dead, I really hope it meant something.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And I just really liked Hugh. I was like into him when we first met him. And I think Jonathan Dalarco is a really great guy. And of course, he's also gay. And so it was really nice to see, like, you know, an actor putting, you know, being inspired by a former partner and all that kind of stuff in his characterization. And I'd really like, yeah, I think it needs to be important that he died. I think it needs to serve a greater purpose too.
Absolutely. Stephen Dawson, can you imagine the feeling of being new to Star Trek, watching and loving Picard, only then to discover there are 7 seasons of TNG for you to devour its lavish backstory? Then, when you're done with that, there will be that nagging question at the back of your mind, I wonder what 7 of 9's origin is. Anyone know where I can find out? Hashtag jealous.
Yeah, Stephen, so you've never seen TNG. Oh my gosh. You got your work cut out for you. And I'm glad that you're loving Picard without having all of that backstory. And 7, I don't know where to start. You just got to watch TNG and Voyager.
I understood his comment completely different. Because of the hashtag jealous at the end, I assumed he was envious of people who were only beginning now and would have all this backstory to catch up with.
Maybe I misunderstood. I don't know, Stephen. Do you mean that you? I don't know. What do you?
He should answer us on the feed.
Yeah, answer us on the feed when this publishes. Are you new to Star Trek and you don't know TNG and Voyager? Or are you just saying how amazingly exciting it would be for someone who doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andrea Boot says, Amy Nelson, don't deny it. We all heard you yelling when Troy came on screen. I cried. I laughed. It was a fan-freaking-tastic episode. Love, love, loved it. Yeah, Amy Nelson was very excited to see Troy. She also was just on the Star Trek cruise, so I'm not sure that she saw it when the rest of us did. We'll have to hear about that from her. Michael Bentley says, the Kzinti are a feline race featured in the animated series. Yes, Michael, they are. It was a really cool shout there.
I first thought that Riker was mispronouncing the Kzinti from Deep Space Nine. Other shows. Because they are actually originally named in honor of the Kzinti from the animated series. So I thought he was mispronouncing the Kzinti.
And I know that other people thought that he was mispronouncing Zindi.
Well, I actually thought he was saying Cindy for the first time, but then I saw the text the second time.
Yeah.
And I thought it was misspelled, but yeah. At Beta Artemis on Twitter, amazingly perfect episode, made all the better by Wild Girl of the Woods Kestra. Riker's total dad energy and poignant tragedy paralleled between Troy and her sister and her own kids. Yeah, I completely agree. It was a beautiful, like a mirroring of what had happened to Troy before.
Yeah. Yeah, I really felt the Rikers and the Troys pain this episode.
Yeah, it almost, you know, I almost get tears thinking about Deanna's or Surtis' performance when she was expressing that sadness. Do you remember, was this before or after she lost her husband? I think it was before.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was just before she lost her husband. So she didn't have that to, you know, as an actress to look back to bring out these feelings, but it was just too real almost.
Yeah. I got it again. Marina just outdid herself with with portraying Troy where she is now. I think she made the episode. I think to me she was the biggest standout.
Yeah, I agree.
Brando Calrissian, I loved the dynamic between Will, Troy, and Picard. It felt like old times, but with baggage you would expect, given how much has happened. After watching TNG, it's good to see these characters living, quote, normal lives outside the uniform and the flagship of the fleet. I am continuing to enjoy the tidbits we're getting on new ships and new technology, because as a Trek nerd, I gotta have it, LOL. Overall, great episode. Admittedly, I was getting bored with the series, but the last two episodes have given the show new life for me. Thanks, Brando. Hoikur, did you think... Okay, maybe it's just me, but I felt like when they were at the dinner table and it was Picard and Troy and Riker and Kestra and Soji, to me, that whole scene felt like it was in the meeting room of the Enterprise D. It felt like everything that was going on there would have been something that was going on with the crew of the D.
Yeah. Talking about the mission ahead and finding out solutions to it. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, and the way that they panned around and everything, I was like, oh my God, this is just like we're in a TNG episode, but now we're on Nepenthe and we're at their house and they're retired and there's the kid. And it took me back.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what one of the feelings that gave us this nostalgia from this episode. This was how much it mirrors that from TNG without being, like I said, directly in your face or a fan service.
Right. Yeah, it didn't feel like that at all.
No.
There are moments that have felt like that in Discovery and in Picard, but this absolutely didn't to me.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very organic.
Yeah, I agree. Daniel Huckfield. Another good episode. This one was like a big hug and a hearty meal with old friends. Think the last three episodes will bring everything together, and I'm happy to say that this is the best first season of any Trek other than TOS possibly. Ian Bartholomew, until this episode I was disinterested in Soji because I frankly liked Dar's character more. Now I'm on board with her sister. I think this was a strong hour. And if I may comment on this, I think I agree because I really felt attached to Dash immediately. And when Soji came on, it took me some time to connect with her. And I'm a big fan of Discovery and I love everything. And I love Georgiou, both Mirror and Prime. But I'm still grieving the Prime Georgiou. And I still would have liked to see her as a captain on this show, even though just as a guest appearance, even more than the Mirror Universe, regardless of how amazing that character is and how amazing Michelle Yeoh is doing.
Yeah, I agree with Georgiou. I still feel that loss, and I wish that we would have gotten more of Prime Georgiou. Yeah. And I agree with you. I feel the same way about Daj and Soji. I instantly fell in love with Daj, and it's taken me a lot long. It's taken me until this episode, really the end of The Impossible Box, when I finally started getting into Soji more. And now I guess that she's activated and she's becoming more three-dimensional. It's meaning more to me now. And yeah, I'm connecting with her more too now.
Yeah, I think it was the same by the end of The Impossible Box when she was being both, you know, manipulated and feeling this hurt and pain when she became so real.
Mm-hmm. Brian Sherman. This was an epic episode. It almost felt like a film. So much happened in 58 minutes. Just when you think Troy stole the episode, Riker swings back with his "let me guess what's going on" moment. I'm heartbroken at the loss of Hugh and thrilled at the thought of Seven swinging in to save Elnor. I'm assuming based on what we saw, I don't watch the previews. And how great has the Ready Room been? Frakes and Spiner were fantastic guests, and if you missed the episodes with Jerry Ryan and Michelle Hurd, you must go back and watch them. So yeah, another reference to the official after show for Picard with Will Wheaton, not to be confused with Christopher Brian Jones' Ready Room, which is a podcast here on Trek FM. Yeah, I am pretty sure, Seven's going to come in and save Elnor. And I did love the fact that Riker just guessed everything that was going on with Picard. That was a stellar moment.
Yeah, that was a beautiful. And for me to see Riker and Picard together, where there was no, because they didn't have the chain of command there. They were completely equal as friends. And there was no sense of hierarchy in their communications this time around. Even though they always respected each other and were friendly with each other, this time around I felt like they were complete equals. And I really liked that.
Yeah.
Michael Marek. The script made a point of having Riker say that he remains a reserve officer, but would only agree to activations for the most serious of situations. It is exactly the kind of seed the writers would plant. It suggests to me that he will show up in whatever the final confrontation of the season is, likely aboard Captain Crandall's newly repaired ship. If Picard were to put out a general distress call for help, identifying himself, I think a lot of Starfleet ships would come flooding in, regardless of what the admirals want. However, I hope that Picard does not duplicate the Discovery season 2 finale in which everybody comes to help. I completely disagree and disagree with some of these things. So I thought that Riker would come in on the Titan because I think Chabon said he's still technically the captain of the Titan. But it makes more sense what you're saying, Michael, is that he would be on this Captain Candrell's ship because they were talking about him. They wouldn't introduce the character without using him in the future, I think. And I think when everyone coming in season 2 finale, it's true. The Klingons came in to help and also the Kelpians. But I was hoping for a lot of Federation ships to come as well. But that was just to see more ships and collect more ships.
Right. And speaking of ships, on the wall behind you, you have quite a collection. Are those Eagle Moss ships behind you?
Yes. These are my life savings. Just kidding. I have the Discovery collection, so I subscribe to that. And then I have Deep Space Nine, Defiant Cloaked,
nice.
Voyager, and Enterprise B, and then Romulan Warbird and Enterprise D. And I'm planning to collect all the Enterprises in extra large versions. So
nice. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, my wallet hates me.
Karen Hasha says, so Agnes, if she slept with Rios to get him on her side, it worked. If she didn't, it worked anyway. Considering that she was so ready to do whatever Commodore O told her to do after that mind meld from hell, she seems to be having second thoughts now. Interesting that she wants to get out only after killing Maddox. I mean, she was struggling with having to kill him, but went through with it anyway because of what she saw in the meld. So why hesitate now? Does she just want someone else to find the effing synth? Or does she not want Soji killed? She risks her life to deactivate the tracker, so it must be some very powerful motivation. Or can it be that she feels bad that Rios suspects Raffi, who has been kind to her, but can't bring herself to confess everything? To be honest, when she replicated the hypo, I thought at first she was trying to kill herself. I'm glad she didn't. I just really wish I knew what her deal was. I'm kind of all over the place, just like Agnes. Yeah, Karen, Agnes is really complicated right now. And it feels like a lot of things are unraveling. I also thought that she was trying to kill herself when she injected the hypo. I know not everybody thought that. And there are some comments later in the thread about that topic. What do you think about what's going on with Agnes?
I think that having read this comment, she's been a very complicated character, like deeply conflicted and probably the most, I think either the most thought out or the least thought out character so far, because she's dealing with so many emotions and so many things that I have to agree with Karen and say, I really knew, I wish what was her deal. And I'm just kind of all over the place. Like Agnes.
Yeah.
So to be honest, I have no idea. I'm really excited to see what the endpoint will be with her in this season.
I'm glad that they're giving her so much more to chew on. I didn't expect that from her first introduction.
No, I agree. And when people were saying that she was doing this on behalf of Commodore O to begin with, I completely disagreed.
I did too.
Yeah, so when everyone was saying it, I was like, nope, nope, nope. And then, of course, she killed, of course, Maddox. Then you realized, and then you saw, oh, mind melding with her.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we were wrong.
Listeners, let's go ahead and move on to your questions and concerns. There were a lot for this episode, and I really liked what you all had to say.
Elizabeth Moore, have we ever seen so much barf in Star Trek episode before, or at all? I understand that they were going for a visceral reaction, but it had my stomach rolling worse than the Egypt episode.
I don't think we've seen barf in Star Trek before, have we?
I mean, not to this point, no. Not this realistic, at least.
We got a double barf Star Trek episode.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that they had two of them. I thought the first one was enough.
I did too. I don't know. Weird. Frosty Winnipeg says, outside of knowing that Riker should never turn his back on making pizza, I'm not sure we got anything significant out of the reunion other than a TNG callback. So Frosty not enjoying the reunion as much as other people have, which is totally fine, Frosty.
Yeah, one of my friends had the same comment, and I guess each to their own. I mean, I can understand how people see it this way, but for me, it was just too beautiful and too emotional to not love it. And like I said, I could watch an entire season or seven of just this kind of interaction between people. Rebecca Skipper, since I'm totally blind, I can't see what happened during the mind meld, but I get the impression that Star Trek Picard is using the control AI theme we saw in Discovery. Artificial life destroying all life in the galaxy? This is a disappointing part of the plot, if true.
Rebecca, I didn't make that connection, but I guess it's very similar.
I made the same connection, and I am concerned if they go too deep into that. If they make some connection to Discovery, I won't mind it. But I'm hoping that it won't become the thing that will be discussed in Star Trek from now on. AI versus not AI fighting. I know it's the theme of the day, but I would like to see more than just this kind of conflict in Star Trek in the future.
I think that there's a lot more to unfold in the last few episodes, and I'm hoping that it will distinguish itself in very big ways from the control situation.
And also because if we compare it to Discovery, in Discovery the AI was clearly evil. And in this show, it's like our main characters are fighting to preserve AI.
Right.
So it's the opposite. But maybe in the end of this show, we might see like that we were in some way wrong with our opinion or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because control was seeking to get rid of all sentient life, and we are trying to talk about synthetic life that is actually sentient and deserves to be treated as such. Ricky Schnurstein says, I liked the episode as it had a lot of callbacks and of course the Rikers, but does anyone else feel like this episode was just one really long short trek? Or perhaps maybe this episode would have been better served as a short trek. Thoughts? I liked the lingering, Ricky. I'm with Hoikur on that. I really liked the lingering around with the characters.
Yeah, and I've shared my opinion of this, but I wouldn't mind short treks involving the Troyes in the future.
So. Oh yeah, and Kestra.
Yeah. Yes, and absolutely. Bad. Yeah. Yeah, even. Because we never got to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Ballinger, I smell time travel and I don't like it. Star Trek has beaten that dead horse way too much as a plot device since its inception. Do try something else, please.
Dennis, you know, okay, I really like the time travel stuff. I don't know if I'm smelling it now, although we did hear the chronometric particles over the speaker in the last episode. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Dennis. I do see where he's talking about the time travel also because of the Vulcan mind meld indicating something in the future, something that's, you know, very ancient, whatever. And I wouldn't mind seeing an entire season of Star Trek, even entire series of Star Trek with no time travel at all. Because when it's done well, I enjoy it. But sometimes I find it's done just for the sake of time travel. And then it's just doesn't interest me. So that's when it comes to my negative affinity, I think time travel is one of the things that I don't enjoy too much.
Okay.
but I forgive it sometimes.
Chris Agui says, one not so minor issue, Nerissa. Why in the whole wide galaxy was it not possible for the writers to give that character a bit more depth? She is as one-dimensional evil as possible. No nuances, no intrinsic motivation, no facets. That is highly irritating, especially in comparison to the rest of the characters, which are really well-constructed. Even Commodore O, Bajazel, and Ramda had more nuances in the little we saw of them. That's a good point, Chris. I can't disagree with that.
I can't either. And like I said before, the moment I saw her, I felt she was being played as a character to be killed. And that's probably why they decided to, or they didn't make more effort into writing her, because I think the actress is really good.
Yeah, I like her.
And I think that whatever she would be given, she would do it amazingly well. But like, yeah, there are no nuances in her. She's just
a baddie.
Just a baddie, yeah. Chad Baird enjoyed it, but sadly, I think they have done a better snapshot of the Rikers and their journey than they have done with Picard in some ways. Suzanne Williamson, also, how is Kestra blonde? Both of Deanna's parents had dark hair. The palette square on this doesn't check out. I know, I'm nitpicking.
Okay, so Suzanne, I did a little Googling, and so the genes for light hair or blonde hair are recessive, but parents with dark hair can have offspring with blonde hair, but it just means that there needs to be a gene, one of the genes for blonde hair, that both parents need to have that gene. That's the only way that they can have a blonde child. So apparently, Deanna and Will both have a recessive blonde hair gene. But the chance of that is just 1 in 4.
Yeah, I'm a proof of that and my family, because me and two of my siblings are completely ginger.
Ah.
And my mom is a blondie and my dad has dark hair. But I completely look like my dad, so there was nothing going on between, you know, my mom and someone else. But I have an older sister and we don't share the same mom, and her hair is kind of like darkish, but not too dark. But she, my sister, even though we have the same father who is completely dark haired, and she looks also completely like my dad, she has completely white hair. So both red hair and white hair is recessive gene.
Right.
Or you should call it recessive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rhys Morgan says, as much as I loved Picard catching up with the Rikers and finding out about Thad, who seems like he may have been J.R.R. Tolkien reincarnated, I did have a couple of annoyances. The Riker family killing and eating unicorn bunnies was strange and not very, quote, Federation, especially as I'm sure Will said to an alien once, something like, we no longer consume animals for food. Also, Rios says that Narek's ship is just outside his ship's sensor range, even though we can see the ship right behind his from multiple perspectives. Does his ship have the smallest sensor range ever? I had forgotten about that we no longer consume animals for food thing. And clearly they were.
I thought of the same thing when Kestra brought in the rabbit about what Will had said in the past. But I think this is maybe one of the three times in Star Trek history that we've had some issues with continuity. Right? Only three times.
Yeah, I need to ask Brandy what she thought about that moment, because she's the one that got me more interested in the idea of favoring continuity over canon, which I think is really smart, and also saves your head from going to that finding little things wrong with everything kind of place.
Yeah.
Silke Fall says, trigger warning. The whole episode got overshadowed by Agnes's suicide attempt. It didn't really come unexpected, but I wish they would have at least put a trigger warning at the beginning of the episode or something. Or even better, blacked out after she injected herself and then returned when the EMH calls Rios or something. There was no need for it to be this graphic. That part triggered me horribly and brought back memories I thought I had worked through and learned how to deal and live with. Thankfully, I had people to talk to and know what to do to avoid a full-fledged mental breakdown. But yeah, long story short, I wish they had done that scene differently. You know, Silke, I know what it's like to for something to trigger you and to go into this terrible anxiety ridden, mentally crazy, upset, freaking out, emotionally not knowing what to do place. I know what that's like, and I'm so sorry that that moment led you back to those kind of memories and thoughts. But I'm really, really glad that you had people that knew how to talk with you during those moments. That is so important. I have people like that too. And, you know, I know that I can call them up when things like that happen and they can help me get out of that as soon as I can. It did occur to me that that felt a little bit much in that moment. And I'm sure that other people, that it had the same effect on other people too. Again, Silke, I'm really glad that you're okay, but I'm sorry that it put you in a place like that. Thank you also for sharing that with us. I think we all support each other in things like that.
Yeah, Silke, I agree. And I think that I doubt it was done intentionally to actually trigger someone, but I think it, when you haven't been in a situation like this in reality, I think it can be difficult to realize how traumatizing it can be. So I can't relate to this thing, fortunately, but when I read your comment, I thought back to things that have been trauma in my life and how I responded and the moments where things would, you know, cause me immense pain or emotional upset, you know, some very simple things. Then I could actually relate to it. And I've never understood trigger warning until I read your comment.
Oh.
It never made sense to me because in like Icelandic culture is different from German culture, which I assume by your name, Silke, that you're from, and American culture. And in Iceland, there is this concept of trigger warning is in a very small group of people. And it never related to me or I felt it mattered to me. But then the way you expressed it really, really got through to me. And I actually want to thank you for opening my eyes to how this can really affect people and to be more considerate about things that might be very difficult to other people.
Sure. Yeah, that's really important. There are things that affect some people in ways that it doesn't affect other people. And I think it's just a way, like you said, to be more sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. And again, thank you for sharing that comment. The last episode, we talked about how when people are dealing with their demons and their issues and their illnesses, taking responsibility for those things and working with them and working through them, and then verbalizing that or sharing that, and in turn helps other people learn how to deal with it. So, yeah, thanks a lot again.
Liz Lubin, I didn't get the feeling that she was trying to commit suicide. She was trying to disable the tracker they made her swallow, and it worked. The tracking beacon disappeared from Narek's screen. I think she was hoping it would disable them without actually killing her.
Yeah, we don't really know yet, do we?
Mm-hmm.
JJ Becker says, I understand the concept that in order to create the treatment for a silicon-based virus, one would need a silicone-based environment in which to culture it. What I don't understand is how or why such a virus would interact with a carbon-based life form. Then Matthew Pittard says, that's my problem. I'm a sciencey person. I'm not a scientist or anything, but I kind of know how things work. And the more you probe this, the more you realize it was done to provide impetus to the story. And that's just blanked up. If Picard can't drive the story forward, then the show has problems.
So the reason why a silicon-based life form would be able to interact with a carbon-based life form is because their outermost layer of their electrons is very similar. And that's why silicon-based life form is so popular in science fiction, because it's a theoretic possibility that a silicon-based life form might be quite similar to carbon-based. But at the same time, it's just cost so much more energy to create the same amount of each carbon or silicon-based molecule compared to carbon-based. So it's very unrealistic to assume that any silicon-based life form exist, but in our lovely Star Trek uniforms, we've seen some actual silicon-based life forms. So
yeah.
I think that's the reason why they would be able to interact, because the electrons on the outermost ring are the same. Or if I'm mistaken, please let me know.
I don't know.
I learned this in biology as a kid, and I loved biology. So I remember learning why silicon, and they actually told us that why silicon-based life was so popular in science fiction is because of the similarities of the outermost ring of the electrons in silicon and carbon.
Hmm.
Liam Smart, another X is going to destroy the galaxy plot. Meh. Hugh is dead. Meh. Was a rather slow episode again in the end, but I guess it can be forgiven because the first part of the episode was good, and the non-Nepenthe plots moved quickly enough. I did feel like Troy and Riker were not as seamlessly written as Hugh and Seven. Still nice to see them though. Sad about that. But that totally just became a thing related to the plot of the season as opposed to a really tragic loss of a child.
Okay, Liam. All of those things worked for me, but okay.
Yeah. I can see that your argument about that. I personally, like I said, I don't like deaths unless they have profound reason. And I also felt a little bit that that was just to tell Shoji that real wasn't always better. But I think also that mirrored Troy's backstory and her family's history. So in a way, and in I work in a very specialized field, and in my field, you sometimes see these tragedies happening within families that you can almost not even think of. You can't imagine them. So I actually try to, in this moment, think back to the moments. I work with cancer patients in rehabilitation. And sometimes you meet people that, you know, you can't believe how many people who are not related within the same family get similar diseases at the same time or even die. So, and I can see these actually things mirroring again and again with different clients. So, whereas in other families like mine, there is no one ever has had cancer. So it seems unreal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Kimberly Lawler says, "It seems churlish to have any complaint about an episode that's so wonderful in so many ways, but I have to register one. The complete absence of Beverly Crusher in any part of this story. I understand many people don't care much for Beverly, although I've always loved her character. Kimberly, me too. I love Dr. Crusher. But even so, she was always important to Picard. She knew him far longer than even Riker and Troy did, was his closest friend and confidant in TNG, and never hesitated to challenge him when he needed it. Also relevant to the show, she's the only one that argued to rescue Hugh and not use him to commit genocide. But apparently Picard said goodbye to her over subspace 19 years ago, and nary a mention since. Not having even so much as a mention of her thus far makes the reunion in this episode just a bit bittersweet. I think we're going to get Crusher, and I think it's going to be really, really important. I just think they're making us wait for it.
Yeah, I think that Crusher really deserves a really deep connection story with Picard.
I do too.
And I hope that they will honor her with that story in season 2.
I do too, yeah.
I agree with you, Kimberly.
And now it's time for your deeper thoughts, listeners.
Kate Summers, Nepenthe is defined as that which chases away sorrow, and that's exactly what this beautiful, beautiful episode did. It reminds us of what Gene Roddenberry set out to remind us, that we can make our own families. This episode is a perfect mix of happiness and sadness that beautifully show the deep relationship between Picard, Troy, and Riker, while acknowledging the losses that they have endured. Amen.
That's nice, Kate. Thanks. I didn't know that Nepenthe means that which chases away sorrow. But yeah, there's a happiness and sadness that coexist in this episode. Yeah. Great point. Carrie Purvis says, "This episode will always have meaning for me on a personal level. I found out my grandfather died a few hours before I watched it, and the episode reflected so many of the emotions I was feeling. I was devastated by Hugh's death, moved by the bittersweet reunion with Deanna and Will, and comforted by Auntie Raffi's kindness. I wish she could have brought me cake and chocolate milk too. It will take some time before I am ready to watch it again, but I am so thankful that I watched it when I did. Star Trek has always been a source of comfort for me during dark times, and this episode was no exception." Carrie, I'm so sorry about the loss of your grandfather. That's really tough to deal with. And Star Trek for me too has been a source of comfort during dark times. I think for all of us, that's something that we can probably all agree with. Thank you for sharing that with us, Carrie.
Yeah, my condolences, Carrie. It must be very, very tough. Chris Chaplin, family. The Star Trek ethos is rooted in family. The unifying connections of the human family at first, then the family of like-minded cultures in the Federation, and the familial connection of a crew. Picard's Enterprise crew, in this case, represented the more global and intergalactic family ideal of the Star Trek universe. The way in which Picard's family, Troy and Riker, both joyfully receive him and critique him in is part of the process whereby Picard will become his best self. Only Riker and Troy can call him arrogant and insensitive and be received as truth from Picard. He needed his stop in the plot to reset his self-perception and strategy with Soji. And also lovely was the life-giving sense of family represented by Kestra and the Riker family's loss of Thad. Unlike Picard and his new crew, loss pushed the Rikers closer together. Raffi, Rios, Picard and Jurati all cut themselves off from meaningful relationships as a result of loss. So far, we have seen this new crew begin to care for each other. I hope Picard's reminder of family leads him to more intentionally turn his crew, his new crew, into family. One which can allow its members to flourish and heal. Star Trek is life-giving.
Yeah, that's another great comment, Chris. I like the juxtaposition in which Picard's family, Troy and Riker, they receive him and they critique him, and that they can call him arrogant and insensitive and he'll listen to them, and that unlike Picard and the new crew, the loss push the other people closer together, and the new crew that we have cut themselves off from meaningful relationships. That is such a cool observation. We have a choice, you know, how we handle things like that.
Absolutely.
And our final comment on the episode, Joey Slawinski says, "One of the thoughts that I've been having about the series so far is that I no longer aspire to be the humans of Star Trek. Humanity on the whole in this series has not been inspiring me to be better. In watching the scenes with the Rikers, however, I saw the humanity that I aspire to. I saw inspiration and it gives me hope. No matter how bad the world/galaxy gets, no matter how many people lose their way, it seems that there are always those who are willing to be kind and rational and who are willing to stand up for the right thing and preserve the good in humanity rather than embrace the bad." I think that's a great way to end the comments for this episode. Mm-hmm. Huikur, what did you think of the fan response to Nepenthe?
I felt that almost 99% or even 101% to satisfy Amy.
There's no, you can't like anything more than 100%. Amy will tell you that.
But anyway, yeah, I think overall people really appreciated this episode. And I do, with every comment that, like negative or a comment that had questions with this episode, I completely understand where they're coming from. There was no comment that I thought was unfair or not, like, true in any way. Sometimes I completely disagree with people, but in this way, when I would say I would completely disagree with someone, it was not an actual disagreement. It's just I liked it, basically. But I could see everyone's point this time around.
Yeah, I think this was a really nice breath of fresh air and a hug and, as one commenter said, kind of a reset button for Picard, the character, and I think for the series, too. Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Tracks on the Line with Mike and Max.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback on four postcards. You can also find us at Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line.
Huikur, it was so fun talking about Nepenthe with you today. Thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure, and especially nice on this beautiful show.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you for adjusting the time difference from where you are now and dealing with me giving you all of these long comments to read in a language that is not native to you. And yeah, you did a great job.
Yeah, I apologize for my mispronunciations and all my hectic sentence readings.
Yeah, you did great.
It would have been perfect in Icelandic.
And where can people find you online?
I try to look into the Babel conference every now and then. And also, I am on Twitter, but I don't use it much, mainly just to follow Star Trek-related stuff. And that's at Toreadoris, T-O-R-E-A-D-O-R-I-S.
Cool. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield, and of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the next episode of Star Trek Picard, Broken Pieces, drops. Hailing frequencies open.
Stop killing the XBs, please. Stop killing the XBs, please. First you took each M, and that was hard enough.
Yes, it was.
Then you took U. What's wrong with you?
Who?
You best not come for 7, or I'm sending you to heaven.
Oh, yes, I will.
Stop killing the XBs, please. Stop killing the XBs, please.